So it happened a few weeks ago on my birthday. I was walking down Charles Street, and the clergy at Old St. Paul's were standing in front of the church, all dressed in their cassocks and surplices and stoles. They had a table on the street where they were offering passers-by a chance to receive ashes. I told Mark Stanley, the rector, that publicly wearing ashes was not usually done at Old First U, and he congratulated us for what we have been publicly wearing for the last 6 years, our civil marriage banner. He congratulated us, and he also was unseasonably gleeful as he said that he was preparing his first same-sex marriage to happen down the street at Old St. Paul. Something, he shared, is happening, something very new in Maryland and in our country. Ash Wednesday is the start of the Christian season of Lent, the time when daylight in the Northern Hemisphere is lengthening toward spring. That's what Lent is about, a time of the lengthening of days. As a symbol of our friend Jesus coming into consciousness of the special role that he would play on earth, they say in some of his stories that he figured it out and then went to the desert and for 40 days prayed and fasted in the wilderness and prepared because he knew that something he was going to do would be earth-changing, life-changing. Cosmos shattering. Christians today spend these 40 days not in the desert, but in symbolic preparation, including symbolic fasting. For many of my Christian friends, when I was growing up, I lived in a town that was mostly Catholic, and Lent meant not eating the flesh of mammals on Fridays especially. All of us had fish and chips on Friday, that's all I remember. And I remember that my playmates ate fish on other days of the week too. I think Wednesday was one of them. And everybody I knew gave something up for Lent. And whether it was something tangible and naughty like chocolate, naughty? Well, anyway. Sometimes the things that they gave up were behavioral, not beating up your little brother. Better obeying mother and father, making my bed every day. Lent led to that special time on Good Friday when nobody said nothing from noon to three, those hours when our friend Jesus was hanging on the cross. Lent was about emptiness and loss and self-sacrifice. These were parts of living out the drama of fasting. Christians are not the only ones who fast at this time of year. Our friends in the Baha'i faith during these days fast. You might know that the predecessor of Baha'u'llah, the Bab, introduced a new calendar into thinking in Persia in the 1840s and 50s. The calendar that had been established by the Quran was very clear. Only the moon was to be used in the determination of what the calendar might be like. And so to have a strictly lunar calendar with no correction for the solar calendar means that for Muslims, the year moves back about 11 days every year. It means that the month of Ramadan, which Becky spoke about this morning, is always moving backward. It happens right now that Ramadan is celebrated from July 8th to August 7th. And for Muslim friends of mine, this is the time when it's the longest days of the year are the times for fasting. And it's like, oh, crap. You know, not being able to eat from before the sun comes up until after the sun goes down. It's like, oh man, give me a winter Ramadan. Summer Ramadans are tough. Well, And Ramadan, of course, is not just about food. It is a time of doing acts of charity. It's a time when one pays off the poor tax that's required as a pillar of the religion. And it is a time when you're encouraged to recite the whole Quran. During that month, to take special time when you're not eating, to say special prayers and to recite the whole Quran in that one lunar month, with the expectation that on the Day of Judgment one will receive a special reward for such activities. Well, the Bab in Persia established practices that gave Baha'is an outlook that said the religion ought to be modern. He's a reformer. And so if the whole world has a calendar that stays the same, 365 and a quarter days at a time, or, you know, leap year and all that, he reconciled the solar calendar to a new calendar that didn't have a lunar month. It had a 19-day month. It had 19-day months in a year. Now that leaves still 4 or 5 days, depending if it's a leap year or not, that you have to kind of figure out where, how things align with one another. But he was really convinced that there should be a calendar that matches up with the rest of the world. And he left it to Baha'u'llah to decide that the year should begin on March 21st, and that all of the months stay the same, with the exception of the intercalary days, I have it written down somewhere correctly, that he decided should not happen between the end of the year and the beginning of the next year, but should happen a month before that. So the last 19-day month from March 2nd to March 21st should be a preparatory day for the new year, a preparatory month for the new year. And so it's Baha'u'llah who established that rather than having the full 28-29-day fast of Ramadan, that they would just have a 19-day fast that would happen at the beginning of March. And for friends that I spoke to, what it was very clear for them is that they do not eat or drink for 19 days in preparation for the new year, and that they do dedicate themselves to a time of prayer, a time of inward recalculation, a time of resetting who they really are and who they really might be. Now, not all fasts are for weeks and months. Jews get a chance to fast but one day a year. I remember a conversation between a Jewish friend and a Catholic friend where the Jew said, well, it's, you know, we don't eat nothing for the whole day. It's not this fish rather than meat, but it's only one day, and that's enough. Thank you very much. Yom Kippur, again, is at the beginning of the year, 10 days into the new year. It's an important way of saying we're starting something new. And from sunset to sunset, a day with no food or drink, a day of solemnity, a day of the recollection of those people who have died in the previous year, of naming them as being written into the book of life and of allowing the book to be closed. These are feeble steps that are taken, but with an intention of being part of the renewal of the world, a part of the tikkun olam. The fast of Yom Kippur is broken not first with food, but with light, as a three-stranded interwoven candle is lit, with fragrance, as a box of spices is passed around and people inhale. I'm remembering cloves and cinnamon. Spirit is invoked, and then the body is tended to with food as the fast is broken. Hindu brides are expected to fast for their husbands for one day each year for the first 5 years of their marriage. The Mangalaguri Puja is performed with fasting by the bride with her intentional prayers for her husband and his success. Alaska-born Hindu Nikki Whiting expresses her feminist critique of this practice. Nowhere do I hear a call for the husband to spend a day in fasting and prayer for his wife. There's something screwed up about that. And she also raises a richer critique regarding the application of such an ancient practice to contemporary life. She says, what about LGBT people? What about, does a wife fast for a wife, a husband fast for a husband? It gets all confusing. And yet, the fasting and prayer is a symbol of the devotion to your partner, a symbol of aspirations for good for their partner. And so she says, while it's kind of retrograde as a practice, I do it because I want the best for my husband, because I am devoted to my husband. And she says, so she shows the seriousness of her intention and the depth of her feelings by wearing jewelry and makeup that benefit her determination. And for that one day, she abstains from eating meat. She does not smoke or consume alcohol, and she does not go on Facebook. That for her, the puja, the special devotional prayer, is about her and her intentions and the direction of those intentions toward the divine, and it's not about being in touch with my friends. It's about me being in touch with myself, with my intentions, and my sense of the holy. So no food, no alcohol, no Facebook. Not no food, no meat, no alcohol, no Facebook. The practice of setting aside time for abstinence from food or mind-altering substances or even social networking is something that we humans do. It's a part of what makes humans human. I don't know how it happened, but somewhere in the shaping of our species, we came to this place where the value of not eating became evident, where the sense of a need for balancing and rebalancing on the inside got connected to a religious life of prayer and fasting. The guardian of the Baha'i faith, after the death of that guest speaker at First Unitarian, Abdu'l-Bahá, said this about fasting: the believer must strive to make the necessary adjustments to her inner life and to refresh and reinvigorate the spiritual forces latent in the soul. Its significance and purpose are therefore fundamentally spiritual in nature. Fasting is symbolic and a reminder of abstinence from selfish and carnal desires. Oh dear. There's the challenge for me. It is easy to imagine that these bodies that we inhabit, no, wait a minute, not inhabit, these bodies that we are selfish and carnal. This old dualist notion that there is spirit and there is matter, that spirit is good and that matter is bad, that the mind and ideas are elevated, and that this flesh is somehow to be subjugated. This dualism is not my theology. For me, the spirit and the body are one. Somehow, as I look at things, as I understand that consciousness is in matter, that without matter, consciousness evaporates, that from my way of speaking, the spirit just disappears. I am not a dualitarian. I'm a unitarian. I don't believe that good spirit is more important than bad bodies. Bodies, these bodies, matter. And matter matters. Still, these bodies, or forgive me, this body, is a body that self-abuses with overwork and with overeating and with lack of sleep. It matters that I find the balance that others find in fasting, without the denigration of the body, without the denigration of me, that might occur with unbridled self-sacrifice, with self-anguish and self-torment. Feasting and fasting, both are part of being human. Holding both, we may find ways both to be and to become who we are and who we will be. And I'm going to close this morning just by asking us to do a little exercise, an exercise that was developed by Richard Bandler, who was one of the creators of neuro-linguistic programming. I'm going to ask you right now to take your heart hand. So take your left hand. I'm going to ask you to look at it. I'm going to ask you to observe your heart hand. I'm going to ask you to take your middle finger of your other hand and just rub the palm of your heart hand. This is the place that you're going to be. I'm going to imagine that you just be here. And I'm going to ask you, as you rub the palm, to sense in the palm that in here is generosity. In here is community. In here is abundance and compassion. In here is charity. In here is good regard. In here is aid.